breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up here on this edition of the slightly smaller roundtable, we're going to talk about the Phil's weekend in Atlanta, the missing offense. What do we do? Is there anything at this point anyone can do to fix the Phillies offense or to help it along or to breathe life into a unit that really has struggled to score runs this season and really more in particularly on this road trip? We're going to talk. It's Trey Turner's birthday today. I just kind of want to get a temperature check on how we feel about Trey Turner's first 3 years in Philadelphia and the New York Mets officially in free fall. Lots of good stuff from this weekend in Pittsburgh with the Mets. Mets fans having a real good time up in New York. So we'll chat about all that stuff on this edition of the podcast. Liz Rocher, not with us on this edition of the Roundtable, but Justin Clue is here, of course, from Baseball Prospectus. Follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. Justin, how you feeling, bud?
Well, the Phillies spin machine is in full effect, as I just saw right before we started recording. If you have any negative feelings about the Phillies, wash them away with the story up on their website now about the new puppy, service puppy in training that's been brought in to the Phillies clubhouse. Yes, his name is Tugger, and mm-hmm. he is perfect. Yep. He's there with Team Foster and the Warrior Canine Connection. They're doing, you know, the dog is 10 weeks old and it's going to be around, I guess, for a while. It's one of those dogs that's going to be like around the team, which probably means mostly used in social media content and whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Still, anytime you see a puppy on screen, it's good news. So wash any of those concerns you have about the Phillies offense away. Their first main addition is a 10-week-old Labrador puppy. And mm-hmm. honestly, I have no reason to think this won't work.
No, it's going to work like a charm. I mean, there's the Fanatic. There's puppies. I'm not sure what the third thing would be, but, you know, usually there's a go-to, you know, when fans are disgruntled and you have to mm-hmm. change the subject or have them avert their gaze in another direction. Puppies! Usually that's exactly.
Puppies! Have the Always Sunny guys record something? Just little buttons that's right. you can push.
That's right. That's another one. You bring Chase Utley and the Sunny guys together and that'll
To be clear, I'm sure this is something with the dog that they've had in the works for a while, given all the, like, the pieces involved and everything. But timing is undeniable.
Right. Well, and here's the thing. To be fair, the Phillies won their series against the Braves this weekend in Atlanta.
Absolutely.
Even though it didn't really feel like it, but the Phillies did take 2 out of 3 from the Braves in Atlanta. But that, of course, was part of a 6-game road trip through Houston in the series before, which we talked about last week, after a dismal showing by the offense, a historically bad showing by the offense in 3 games in Houston. And offensively, things didn't get a whole lot better for most of the Atlanta series either. They had the big breakout game on Friday night after the rain delay, winning 13-0. But the Phillies offense really struggling here over the last week, and it's been part of a trend, the offense not hitting for power outside of Kyle Schwarber. They really struggled to score runs. But despite the offense, despite the 2-4 road trip, the starting rotation continues to be unbelievable right now. They are carrying this team. And the Phillies are 49-35, 1.5 games up on the Mets for first place in the National League East. Your Phillies are in first place in the National League East. And, you know, there are other teams with other problems throughout Major League Baseball. The Phillies have their own, of course. I want to put the offense aside for just a second. We're going to get to the offense here in
just a
minute. Yes, we will get there. We'll get there, everybody. It is first foremost on your mind. It's foremost on our minds as well. But let's start off the podcast with one of the really great developments that has happened here this season since he's come back from the injured list. We've got to talk about the amazing pitching of Ranger Suarez. We're watching is one of the greatest runs by a Phillies pitcher in franchise history. 7 innings pitched on Sunday, 1 earned run allowed, 8 strikeouts. It is his 5th straight start in which he's gone at least 7 innings. It is his 10th straight start in which he's gone at least 6 innings. Over his last 10 starts, he has a 1.19 ERA. That's the lowest ERA by any Phillies pitcher over a 10-game stretch since Cliff Lee did it back in 2011. And if you go back to 1969, when the mound was lowered to where it is now. The only other Phillies with an ERA under 1.20 over any 10-start span, Roy Oswalt did it back in 2010. I forgot that Oswalt had a run that good with the Phillies. And Steve Carlton back in that historic 1972 season when he won 27 games for a team that only won 59 of them. So, Justin, what we're seeing from Ranger Suarez is historic in terms of what the Phillies are doing, and really in baseball right now. Pitchers are not going deep into games. Pitchers are not having this kind of success unless they're throwing Tarik Skubal type stuff, Hunter Brown type stuff, you know, where you're gassing people in the upper 90s with devastating breaking pitches. Ranger Suarez is doing this with a fastball that barely gets above 90 miles an hour. But this is, I think, the left-handed modern day equivalent of how Greg Maddux used to get people out. Not saying Ranger Suarez is Greg Maddux, but in the way that you had to have, if you didn't have this 90s plus fastball, the command that he's displaying with the movement and the different types of pitches, he is truly unique in Major League Baseball right now. There is no one like him, I don't think. I can't think of another pitcher that is doing what Ranger Suarez is doing with the arsenal that he has.
You know, Dombrowski's talked about how much he likes guys that go deep into games, but when you start talking about Suarez being a like one-of-one player, we've talked about that in terms of Kyle Schwarber as well. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that in terms of Harper to an extent as well. And I feel like the Phillies might have more guys who are just, you know, irreplaceably unique, I guess, is how you would phrase it, or at least distinct on their roster. Because guys like somebody like Suarez can step up and pitch like Greg Maddux, even if he's not like a long-term comp to Greg Maddux. I feel like he might have the highest ceiling performance-wise of anybody on that roster, like anybody in that rotation. There's people who you would slot in ahead of him for sure, obviously. But if your challenge was like send one guy out there to pitch a no-hitter, you would not look stupid sending Ranger Suarez out there to like try and achieve that. He is utterly stifling to batters. I know you just ran through some of those stats, but Real Muto was telling reporters after the game, in Scott Lauber's story, about how, you know, by that point, you know, by the seventh, guys are typically laboring, guys are, you know, starting to do a little bit wrong. And he was surprised at how easy, that was the word he used, easy it was for Ranger Suarez. And he was actually advocating for Suarez to go back out after that. You mentioned that 119 ERA over his last 10 starts. Opponents are hitting under 200 against him over his last 10 starts. He's got a million offerings with perfect control. He's never thrown much higher than 90, like you said. And he's got those defensive instincts that always work, maybe a little more casually than anybody else's, but they work. That's a playoff pitcher. That's a pitcher built almost exclusively for the playoffs. If that was a position where you could just keep guys on a shelf and then bring them out for the playoffs, Suarez would be like the first guy in that position. I think Lauber wrote that Suarez is the only pitcher in the majors this season to complete 7 innings in 5 consecutive starts. You mentioned Tarik Skubal. He was potentially going to do that last night against the Twins, and he did. He went 7 against Minnesota. He struck out 13, including 9 of the first 12 he faced, using that high-velocity stuff you were talking about. Skubal's probably the best pitcher in baseball. Yep. I would not be surprised if Ranger did any of the things Skubal did last night against the Twins. I think he's capable of all of that. Again, the asterisk is like, yeah, he's had plenty of downturns and spirals and injuries and missed time and all that. Like that kind of like chunks up his success a little differently. But after this 2-4 road trip, like that's so lousy, but somehow it's this victory. It's like productive because the Phillies starting pitching, including Ranger Suarez, just dragged them through these messes where they just weren't scoring runs and got them wins that they ultimately didn't really deserve.
Right.
And so now it's time, like, let's just consider that a part of the past, like that stretch. Just start making other things work, because what little brilliance this team has shown in the last week is entirely the product of their rotation and Ranger Suarez, except for one game, which was, of course, the game where no regular starters were pitching. So it's time to pay back the starters for what they've been able to do by actually scoring an average amount of runs per game for a little bit, I think.
The key to Ranger Suarez is his health. The only times we've seen him struggle is when he hasn't been healthy, and that's when he struggled last year coming back off the injured list. When he was feeling good, when he was feeling healthy, we saw him do this in the first half last year where he was on a glide path to the All-Star game and was legitimately a Cy Young candidate. And he's a Cy Young candidate right now, even having missed the first few weeks of the season. He's pitching that well that you have to consider him to be among the top five in terms of National League Cy Young candidates. I don't think there's any chance he could win it, not in a National League with Zach Wheeler and Paul Skenes in it, even though I think the numbers are pretty comparable at this point. But wouldn't it be something if Ranger Suarez won a Cy Young Award before Zach Wheeler did? It would be. I don't know how I'd feel about that. I love Ranger Suarez. I'd be happy for him. But at the same time, you know, Zach's having a phenomenal season himself and really is kind of owed one of these things at some point here in the next few years. The thing is, you know, he had a really good Jesus Luzardo start in the game they lost in Atlanta on Saturday night. He went 7 innings and only gave up 2 runs. I mean, so he pitched really well. And in Houston, of course, everybody pitched great in Houston. Even the relievers pitched really well in Houston. Every one of those games was razor thin. Even though the Phillies got swept in that series and didn't score, the two teams were pretty close because the Astros offense wasn't doing much against Phillies pitching either. So, you know, it just was this offense. And I guess we've got to kind of transition into that now because that's really what the storyline is for the 2025 Phillies here as we're getting ready to get into July, just a couple of weeks before the All-Star break. The offense continues to terrify the fan base. There's no confidence in the offense at all. Yes, they're in first place. It's being done solely on the back of the starting pitching. If the offense could just even get them 3 runs a game, if you could guarantee 3 runs a game, this team probably goes 4-2 on that road trip, 5-1 on that road trip. If the offense is competent, and that's the problem, is that we're just seeing with this offense way too many players underperforming. The great plate discipline we saw going into the road trip disappeared in Houston and Atlanta. And the offense, the power still hasn't come around, Justin. We're trying to think of fixes. What can they do to fix this offense? Because this is the nightmare scenario.
I think you're going about this all wrong, unfortunately.
Okay.
Since May 1st of this year, the Phillies are a top 10 team in run scoring across all of baseball. Since June 1st, they are a bottom 10 team in run scoring across all of baseball. You don't fix an offense like that. You kind of just have to wait it out. Fixing the Phillies offense means making it consistent. Is that going to happen in 2 weeks or whatever before the trade deadline? Is that going to happen? No, that hasn't happened for years now. And they haven't really changed it dramatically enough to really have like a whole new offense in there. So I will continue to say what I feel like I've said this whole time is that fixing this offense, I mean, this is just, it's working the way it's supposed to, unfortunately. These are a bunch of guys who are streaky and together they streak. Like that's what happens. And we've seen them sink this low before, typically this low, like how low they got in Houston. That's not super common, but it is something that they have always been capable of. I mean, you can drop somebody in there who's been hitting for more power successfully this year if you want to. Drop Taylor Warden there, Jaron Duran, Luis Robert Jr., like anybody, you know, that'll do something, but the offensive only lurches forward when it feels like it. But the good news is that an offense like that doesn't need fixes, it needs things to feed off of periodically throughout the year. So in 2011, the Phillies offense was pretty dead throughout the month of May. For 9 straight games, they scored only 3 or fewer runs, and they lost 6 of those games. So, you know, this, I know that doesn't sound like a ton, but in 2011, that was so much. That was unacceptable, obviously. Yeah. Then Chase Utley comes back from a knee injury. Gets a huge standing ovation in the first inning on May 23rd, like he was back from the dead. I remember like the memes going around on Facebook showed like a beam of heavenly light shining down on the Phillies' second base position. Like that night he comes back, Phillies blow up the Reds with 10 runs. 2 nights later, they're still playing the Reds. They hang another 10 spot on them in the series finale. They win that series. They take 3 of 4. What did Utley do? Almost nothing. In fact, in game one, he went 0-for-5 back at the plate. But was the offense fixed? Also, no, not really. At the end of May, they started another stretch of scoring 3 or fewer runs in 8 out of 9 games. So in either case, okay. The point is, though, that they woke up and they scored a bunch of runs in those games. Utley came back. It was an event of some kind. The crowd was into it. Utley's presence, as both Cole Hamels and Charlie Manuel hand-wavingly kind of said, played a role whether he contributed directly onto the field or on the field or not. And this is another team that has the ability to score and can do so a lot. Scored 13 runs on the Braves just a couple of days ago, but they need to be jarred back to life on occasion Bryce Harper coming back is going to be their version of that. The crowd's going to be more beefed up. Harper's back in the lineup. Game's feeling a little bigger and a little buzzier. They'll probably remember how to hit for a couple of days. Harper himself tends to have this thing where he comes back from a long stretch of being away. He like goes off in the first game or two. Then he relapses for like a week or two after that and kind of needs to recharge. And so I honestly don't think you're going to see Harper operating at a fully functional capacity until after the All-Star break. So does having Harper back fix this offense long term? No. But right now, I just don't think, does it fix the offense long term? Oh, does it make them consistent all the time, I guess, is my point there. No, because nothing will. But it is the next thing for them to be able to feed off of, because they're wobbly. This is how they operate. Yeah. And then, what's all this stuff again? Like, they need to be shaken aggressively on occasion. And milestone moments throughout the season can do that. We talked earlier this season about Otto Kemp popping up. And, like, maybe the team had a little more juice because they looked a little better and they were trying to, like, get this new guy to assimilate. And they didn't want it to, like, you know, they're just playing better because something has changed. Some new thing has occurred, and it's sort of like, you know, an act of it creates motivation for you to, like, you know, play a little better. I don't know, but I feel like that is how this offense has historically operated. So I look to Harper coming back to do something to this team and hope they can keep finding ways to recharge themselves from there, because otherwise, if you're on a quest to make this team hit consistently, good luck. I don't know what to tell you. I just don't think that's something they can do.
There's a lot of truth to that. I think you're right. I think there's not a whole lot the Phillies can do at the trade deadline. I would love to see them get creative while at the same time not selling the farm for different, you know, and getting rid of all of the prospects that are down there. There are some I'm ready to move. There are some I'd be fine with moving. You know, I could have a conversation about Justin Crawford moving somewhere. I could even have a conversation about Aiden Miller getting moved somewhere for the right person with enough years of team control and a good enough age in order to do that. I don't know that kind of player is out there right now. But could have that conversation for sure. But
now, let me ask you this, though. Is your willingness to and increased willingness to trade higher and higher prospects, or at least more and more known prospects, based on a familiarity with them and a belief in projections as to how they're going to turn out and fit in with this team on the major league level? Or does it have more to do with your frustration with the offense has grown so high that you are now just willing to trade better and better players?
You know, I think it's more just, and I'm sure that I'm being impatient with the prospects, but I'm in Justin Crawford. I know the numbers look good down in AAA, but I just don't know that. I mean, from all the different reporting that you hear about and the people who've seen him play day in and day out of the type of player that he is, it sounds, you know, it sounds like we're talking about a singles hitter who has a lot of speed and plays really good defense, but, you know, is a better version of like Ben Revere, you know, a more effective Ben Revere, but someone who's going to maybe, you know, he'll maybe hit close to 300, but with a little bit better walk rate, but he's, you know, give you a couple more home runs, but not, I don't know that you're looking at a 4 or 5 win player in Justin Crawford down the line, you know, not this year, but down the line as that type of player. Aiden Miller, the book is still really early on him. He's only 21 playing at AA. He's not had an impressive season in Reading so far. You know, it's just, I know he's still a highly regarded prospect, and I'm still very intrigued in what I've seen from him, but he's not forcing any decisions to be made right now, even about moving to AAA. And that's okay. Like, I get it. He's 21. He's in AA, you know, and that's, he's still probably a little bit young for that league. I guess if I'm thinking about, like, hey, I'm reluctant to trade a guy I think is going to be a superstar, am I being impatient by not thinking we should be seeing more of that at AA where he is right now? Or is that, you know, is that impatience on my part? And if trading Aiden Miller is going to bring you someone like Jaron Duran, who was like a 7-win player a season ago, who still has three years of team control left, is that and he plays the outfield, whereas Aiden Miller is not an outfielder. You know, he's a shortstop who could maybe move to third base, or maybe you could transition him to left field. Do I make that swap? I at least think about it, because not only does Duran help you for this year, he helps you kind of down the road as well. While this starting rotation is kind of intact, and I was hoping we might see Aiden Miller next year. I don't think that's looking that promising right now. So, you know, it's more along the lines of that than I'm as panicked about the offense as I, you know, although I do feel a sense of panic about the offense.
Kind of like how the window is sort of closing on, like, all right, Miller has this reputation built from last year and a bit from this year, but he's kind of stalled out a little bit. So the window might be closing on his sexiness as a trade prospect potentially. So you're going to take advantage of that while you still can. That's not saying he doesn't get better or even come up and stay with the Phillies and become an impactful player for them someday. It's just that at this moment in time, you know, with the state of where he's at and what the Phillies need, there is a possibility that he could get, you know, worked into a trade, or that that's who somebody could still be interested in despite his struggles right. This year. And I totally see that. That makes yeah. total sense. And part of me is saying, like, you know, I, as someone who's saying this offense needs things to feed off of throughout the year, make it a big part of me is just curious to see like what they would do, because it would have to be creative. That's the really interesting part, is that they would have to do something creative that wouldn't be something that probably is getting talked about on podcasts like this. So I am curious to see like what that would be. Even if it doesn't come to fruition, I would like to see like what's the post-game report on the Phillies war room and like what they really were willing to do, because they're coming off this period in which the roster acquisitions were based more on we think this is going to work and we think this is going to work, and all you're ever doing is making your best guess. But the Phillies, you know, they made some lighter guesses coming into this season, so I'm curious to see how that approach is going to adapt as they address these very real issues.
And I agree with you. I think Bryce Harper coming back this week, and it sure sounds, as we're recording this ahead of the series beginning against the Padres in Philadelphia this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, that it sounds like he's going to be ready to go, if not for Monday, then for at some point on Tuesday or Wednesday. But that will be a help. And you're right. It might just be more of a jolt of energy to have your former MVP, the best hitter on the team, back in the lineup, shuffling everybody back down the order just a little bit. So with Bryce Harper coming back, it is going to lead to a roster decision here, Justin. They're going to have to send somebody back down to AAA or release somebody or something like that. Otto Kemp has started just about every game that he has that the Phillies have played since he got called up. And the numbers aren't amazing, but he has made an impact. He has done some good things. He's gotten some big RBIs in the game on Sunday. Broke through against Spencer Strider with an RBI double when it felt like the Phillies were going to get shut out again. Helped the Phillies score two runs in that inning to get that 2-1 win. And he's played first base, he's played third base, and he's been part of the platoon, the right-handed side of the platoon, in left field with Max Kepler. I don't really see him going back down to the minors at this point, but...
Well, you'd be crazy. I mean, I don't know if people keep track of, like, who's the best seven-hole hitter in baseball or whatever. Like, I know he's moved around a little bit, but... Kemp is, for the role he has excelled. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you'd be nuts to instinctively get him off the roster.
Yeah, I'm not sure who gets sent down when Bryce Harper gets activated off the injured list. I'm trying to run through my mind, you know, everybody on the roster, and it's Kepler, it's Johan Rojas, it's Otto Kemp, it's Brandon Marsh. You've got... who's the fifth? I mean, you've got Edmundo Sosa.
Buddy Kennedy.
Oh, Buddy Kennedy's still in the run. Okay, so Buddy Kennedy's the one who goes. That's what happens. And it just is. You know, sorry, buddy, but I forgot that it was Buddy Kennedy. Yeah, that's an easy call.
All right. Hey, we actually resolved a topic. That never happens. Zip that shut.
It feels cleansing, doesn't it? Yeah. All right. I want to talk a little bit. So talking about some of these parts of the offense that aren't working, and I, again, about possible solutions, one of the areas of this offense that is not working is Max Kepler. And I couldn't believe I went on a canoeing trip with my sons this weekend.
Reflect on the Max Kepler disaster.
To really reflect on
talk about we brainstormed solutions over the campfire.
Well, I couldn't believe when I was reading that he was complaining about playing.
It's objectively funny when
I'm scrolling on X and I'm seeing people comment about, you know, Kepler talking about playing time. Like he didn't really complain about a lack of playing time, right? So I'm searching the Phillies.com, the MLB, and darned if there aren't quotes from Max Kepler, and then Rob Thompson responding to it. Max Kepler is saying, well, you know, one of the reasons I'm having trouble is I'm not playing every day. And yes, the Phillies had a run of starting pitchers, left-handed starting pitchers on the road trip where Otto Kemp got the starts and Kepler sat for like 4 days in a row. I'm sure that's not great. I'm sure that when he signed here, he was told that he was going to get a chance to try and play every day. But that being said, Rob Thompson, after the game, I guess it was on Saturday, essentially said, listen, if Kepler, you know, we feel like the fact that he started 65 games kind of means he's a starter. But if he can't get into become a productive player, you know, not playing every single day, he's got to figure it out. And I was like, yes, thank you, Rob Thompson, especially when you're hitting 209 with a 300 on base percentage and a 377 slugging percentage, when with runners in scoring position, Max Kepler is hitting 143 with a 190 slugging percentage with runners in scoring position, you don't get to say anything about your playing time. You're lucky you're on the team. And I'm at the point where if you really wanted to shake things up on the offense, and I don't think it would make a huge sea change, but this certainly would be an eye-opening move. Max Kepler's are DFA-able. They just are. He's hit 185 in June. He hit 188 in May. They got rid of Whit Merrifield with numbers little worse than this, but not too much worse. Whit Merrifield was sent packing, and you got a guy who's going to complain about his playing time, and you're hitting with that slash line? I would have, as a member of the I Wasn't a Believer in Max Kepler fan club from the start, I would have no qualms with DFAing Max Kepler. I think it's time, and call up Justin Crawford. Or even, I know Gabriel Rincones' numbers in AAA aren't that great, but if he's only going to hit against right-handers, give that a try. Something different. Because I can't take it much more. It's not working.
It's like you have to explain to a guy who you didn't give $10 million to hit 207 that the you who signed here was only maybe going to do what the you from now has done. Do you understand that? The you yeah. from now has been as bad as we were worried the you from then could have been.
Right.
So those are two different people. So when, you know, you make the argument, well, I was signed to do this. Yeah, you were. You're not doing that because hitting well is part of that job and having that job and keeping that job. And you're not hitting well. Now, to a certain degree, you got to throw it out there. This was framed as just an amicable sharing of views. Kepler and Thompson have no like ongoing feud, according to reports or anything. And to a certain degree, Kepler has a point in that if the Phillies said you're the everyday left fielder, then you don't think my job is going to be in danger at any point. You're thinking like I can get relaxed and get into a groove. I don't have to throw a fit in my head when things aren't working because I know my job isn't automatically in danger because there's another guy. But like, you know, it's Major League Baseball. Your job's always in a little bit of danger if you're not going to play at an acceptable level. So, you know, the Phillies also, this is kind of like part of this ambiguous outfield plan they've had for years where it's like, oh, Marsh is the center fielder of the future. Rojas is getting all these chances and opportunities because we see more in him. And Kepler's the everyday left fielder now. Also, Schwarber's going to be back in the mix for various reasons. Feels like through a combination of bad luck and unsatisfactory results, the Phillies' plan for the outfield has just been like, maybe this will work. And Kepler's kind of part of that. He's a $10 million part of it, but he is part of that. Now, let's say he goes on a heater from today until the All-Star game. Okay, fine. Yeah, he pulled it together at some point. But even then, what we've gotten from Max Kepler is simply not what he was brought here to do. Oh, you need time to get in a groove? Well, I'm sorry, Max, but you've played in 75 out of the 84 games the Phillies have played this year. You've had time to get into a groove.
Yeah.
You know, those three games where they sat you against a lefty didn't just absolutely tank your numbers or take you out of the All-Star running. You had time to find the offense. And a couple of times it even looked like maybe you were finding it, and then you didn't. So when do the Phillies lose patience? I'm with you. Like, it's like Taiwan Walker. At a certain point, you know, you paid a lot of money for this guy in a sort of a maybe capacity, and maybe is kind of here. So, yeah, I think it would be refreshingly direct and effective for this team to kind of move on from Max Kepler sooner rather than later because, what if he has a great second half? What if he goes somewhere else and hits? I'm willing to take that risk because at this point, you know, and the Phillies search for a World Series title, and at this point in this individual season, you can't have that dead weight sitting in the lineup, not knocking in runs when with runners in scoring position. Kepler's the only one of these guys who, you know, we're talking about how this offense operates. Kepler's the only one of these guys who doesn't seem to, like, feed off of these events I'm talking about, even when everybody else does manage to get into a groove and start hitting. Kepler really just hasn't found a groove. He's had like two hot non-consecutive weekends, I feel like, throughout his Phillies career, and that's about it. So if you're not getting it, I mean, you got to get out of the way, at least like you're saying. Maybe there's not a direct answer, but there is something different you can try.
He's had a couple of five-game spurts where he's hit like four home runs in five games, and then other than that, nothing. And my point is, if you can't be trusted with, I'm going to say, little, and it's not been little. He's been he's been entrusted to get the lion's share of the starts in left field. If you have to prove, and baseball's a prove it sport. You have to prove that if you can't show us that you can hit right-handed pitching, why on earth would you be given the opportunity to try and hit left-handed pitching? And I grant Kepler that he probably was told he would have a chance to play every day, play against left-handers. And he got two starts against left-handers in the first week of the season. And then really the Phillies abandoned that plan because that's what Rob Thomson does. He wants to keep all of his players fresh. He truly believes in the platoon splits. He believes in righty on lefty, lefty on righty. And that's honestly how the team was set up. None of us believed it in the offseason when they told us that Max Kepler was going to play against righties and lefties, that he was going to play every day. That's why the signing never made any sense, because you're trying to shoehorn something just like they tried to do with Austin Hayes last year against right-handed pitching. It's hope is a tactic, and it doesn't work. It hasn't worked. It didn't work with Josh Harrison. It didn't work with Whit Merrifield last year, and it didn't work with Max Kepler this offseason. I'm at the point, and especially if you're going to talk about your playing time, hey, I said the same thing with Castellanos when he was getting angry for being pulled for a defensive replacement. You have teammates for a reason who have specific skills. In some of these different areas, they have skills that are superior to yours. If the goal is to win, which it should be for all these guys, especially if you're a low 30s, mid 30s age player who has never been to a World Series before, suck it up. Take the 75% of the starts that you're getting for this $10 million contract and hit better. Then we can have a conversation. It's kind of like what Brandon Marsh has done. Really hit has been since the start of May has hit right-handers really well. So you know what? Now he's getting some more opportunities against left-handers and hanging in there against left-handers, especially was one of the few guys in Houston that did okay against some of the left-handed pitchers that they were facing. That's how this is supposed to go. So lose me with the complaints. And I get it. He wasn't railing against Rob Thomson, but to openly complain about it when your numbers look the way they do, totally tone deaf, especially for a fan base that has really kind of put up with a lot of nonsense with the signing and all of the nonsense we were told about how it was going to work out.
He's got to advocate for himself. I do.
Yeah,
I understand
fine.
That.
Yeah,
but
yeah, I understand.
Boy,
yeah.
One look at those numbers and you're like, and this guy wants to be out there more. And yeah, I don't want to just repeat myself, but
right.
The thing he's complaining about not having is something he's had for the first 3 months of the season, and it hasn't, his numbers haven't improved. So yeah, it gets a little, at least laughable to see a guy hitting like that complain about not getting to hit.
And by the way, that's the only path for Justin Crawford to get called up because Brandon Marsh isn't going anywhere. Johan Rojas isn't going anywhere because you need the right-handed bat. You need the right-handed bat in Otto Kemp. It's got to be a lefty-for-lefty swap out. If Justin Crawford is getting called up, it's going to come at the expense of Max Kepler. There's no other way it makes sense for the roster. There just isn't. There's no way to get Justin Crawford on the big league team unless Max Kepler is leaving. That's it. So if you want Justin Crawford in the big leagues, Max Kepler is not a Philly anymore. And that's a trade I'm willing to make. JT Realmuto. Time to play a little less even than he has been playing, Justin. Among 88 catchers who have played any catcher this year, he ranks 33rd in wins above replacement. But among 10 catchers who qualify for the batting title, he ranks 8th among the 10 catchers in wins above replacement. JT Realmuto hitting 240, 307, 353 this year. I wrote a piece for The Good Fight a few weeks back. If JT Realmuto is still going to be a well above average defensive catcher and he's hitting like this, if he's your number 9 hole hitter, I can live with those numbers. The only issue is JT Realmuto is still getting a lot of opportunities in big spots. And those double plays, some of the undisciplined at bats that he in particular has had over the last couple of weeks, they have killed some rallies. And it's nothing new from Realmuto over the last couple of years, but you really see the decline coming. But this is an area where I don't think more Rafael Marchand necessarily is the answer.
Yeah, I'm a little curious as to how this catching situation that is very much on the back burner, I think, for the team and the fans right now. I'm just very curious to see how this plays out. You're starting to see some questions pop up in like the Matt Gelb mailbag and stuff, and somebody asked the other week about like, okay, we're trading people and thinking about the future and Realmuto's contract and everything, who's around and like what should we expect from Eduardo Tait? And yeah, Gelb is really starting this refrain of like, this is just everyone's reminder that Eduardo Tait is not 19 years old yet.
Yeah.
So even if he is someone within the organization, he is still years away. And he is not someone that is definitely the catcher of the future right now either. There is a lot of growth that needs to take place in those years. So again, as we were saying, probably last year around this time, the future of the catching position in this organization is not here yet. And I'm very curious to see where they go because, yeah, the less Real Muto, all I can think is, well, that means more of somebody else. And who is it? And it's going to be Rafael Marchand, who is Rafael Marchand. He's fine. He's a young backup catcher. You know, he can occasionally hit the crap out of the ball, like really, really hit a really, really far home run. But you know, there's nothing totally out of the ordinary or special here. And again, as a backup catcher, that's sort of where your expectations are anyway. So I don't know, maybe more playing time from Marchand is good for him, but that's all I'm focusing more on. Okay, but what happens without Real Muto? Because you're right. The offense has been killing, smothering a lot of rallies. I feel like, you know, yeah, he's the guy that's jogging down. Well, not jogging, but like he's the guy who's the second out in a lot of inning ending double plays of late. And like the stuff that used to be his specialties, you know, when he led the league in caught stealing percentage with like over 40% of base runners, that's down to 26. You know, he's down there with like Sean Murphy and Miguel Amaya. Like he's down there in the late teens, early 20s now. So like those numbers aren't even as special as they used to be. You know, that's not to say Real Muto doesn't have value as like a veteran catcher and leader on the field, but like we're getting kind of far down on the stuff of things catchers need to be good at that Real Muto is no longer elite at. And that is something that is impacting this lineup and this team on the field. So yeah, I'm very curious to see how this gets worked out because maybe the future is still Real Muto for a couple of years. Could very well be the answer. It kind of seems like the most likely one right now because again, right now, the catcher that's going to catch for the Phillies after JT Real Muto is playing for some other team, and we don't know who he is.
I mean, they might give it to Marchand if some team is willing to outbid the Phillies in free agency for Real Muto. If I'm the Phillies, I don't offer, like, I'll make a bid. I'll make a one-year offer for him in the offseason. If it's a cheap deal, then I'll make a two-year offer. But he's not somebody I need to sign an extension to right now. I'm happy to wait that situation out and see how things play out. And if JT Real Muto is still kind of there, I know the catching free agent pool is always weak, and he'll be probably the top catching free agent out there. But I don't know that necessarily means he's going to score a big deal because the numbers just don't bear it out so far this season. I want to talk about one other player, and I know this is – I hate that we're – for a first-place team, we're focusing on so many things that aren't working, but this offense really is the main story and the thing that could – the thing that will foul this season up if they don't win a World Series. I got to say, I want your thoughts on Bryson Stott. What is his future here? He's still – they still see him as only a platoon guy. He is still just a platoon guy, and as you know, we heard last year the numbers didn't. The elbow injury affected his numbers, and that was all this. That was all that. His numbers in 2025 are worse than they were a year ago. Now they're just a hair worse, but essentially he's having the exact same season in 2025 that he had in 2024. Last year he hit .245. This year .244. Last year the on base percentage was .315. This year it's .312. Last year the slugging was .356. This year it's .341. Now, his defense is gold glove caliber. That's why he ranks 9th out of 17 second basemen in terms of FWAR. But in terms of offense, I think this is who he is. In three of his four seasons, Justin, this is the player we've seen. This is who Bryson Stott is. And this is part of the issue is, again, you can only have so many guys hit 8th or 9th in the lineup. Some of those guys, if you've got three or four of those guys, some of them have to hit 7th and 6th. So there's just no way you can have like four number 7, number 8 hitters in a lineup that you want to have a really deep lineup. You can't look at Bryson Stott as an impact above average offensive player for his position. Even in terms of his position, he's below league average in terms of offense. So I'm wondering, would you move Bryson Stott in a deal at the trade deadline? If he's like part of a larger package, like let's say you're moving Justin Crawford and somebody says, you know, we want Bryson Stott as well. You put Edmundo Sosa playing second base every day for this year, maybe, and then figure out what you do at second base in 2026. How open would you be to Bryson Stott being involved in a trade?
Have to be for somebody that I am convinced, you know, in order for me to be like, I'm signing off on this, it would have to be somebody I'm convinced is going to be able to hit for power effectively in the Phillies lineup. I feel like it has, that has to be for that answer. I have to be more convinced that they have found their answer in the outfield, at least for like the last couple months, at least to get them to a World Series title in 2025. Mm-hmm. I think that's maybe a little niche, but at the same time, I feel like that's okay. You know, like let's get that answer to the outfield that gets the World Series trophy. And if that takes giving up Bryson Stott, I think I'm open to that, honestly. You know, I love the defense. I obviously made a lot of big statements about him becoming a better player this year. Last year's a hiccup. We've seen a bunch of good players have a tough year in Philadelphia and then come out looking better the next, you know, a couple of veteran guys. And Stotts, you know, he's more of a veteran than he's ever been at this point. He's not the young guy straight out of the Phillies farm system anymore. I remember having conversations with I think it was Tim Jackson from Fangraphs about how, like, how soon do you think Bryson Stott's going to be leading off for the National League in the All-Star game? And we thought it was going to be sooner rather than later. Obviously, that's not happening this year. So this has been a kind of discouraging front half of the season of what I was hoping was going to be and fully expecting to be a much improved offensive output from Bryson Stott. And we're just not getting that. Now, I'm not saying if in any situation I'd be thinking, like, how do we get rid of this guy? Because the defense does make him very valuable. But how many positions do you want to have platoons at?
Right.
You know, and at a certain point, you recognize the context of where the Phillies are. If the trade that you think does get them, you know, what they need to get to a World Series, then yeah, I at this point in time, I'd be willing to include Bryson Stott in that trade. He's hitting fewer line drives than he ever has. He's making less hard contact than he ever has. He's hitting more fly balls than he ever has, and fewer of those fly balls are becoming home runs than ever before. So the numbers are very, very, very not where you want them to be. And, you know, if we're trying to swap guys who aren't impacting the lineup out with guys who are, that's an area where that could happen.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there is a future where, like, the Phillies make some adjustments and next year the lineup has, like, Marchand starting at catcher and Stott's still starting at second, but they're just considered, you know, more defensive guys who are just lower in the batting order. And that's the kind of player the Phillies have settled at because they're getting their offensive output from other places and other ways that the roster has evolved. I don't know. I could see that working too, because again, the glove is fully there, but boy, you can't look at this team without letting its lack of offense really define, really define it the past couple weeks. And that's an area where you could improve it.
Yeah. For a kid should be entering his prime right now, they're not letting him hit against left-handers and even against right-handers where he should have the platoon split advantage. It's not like these numbers are getting weighed down by his numbers against lefties. These are essentially his numbers against right-handers. I mean, for the most part. And you know, there is a little bit of, there's obviously some difference. He has struggled against lefties and that is included in these numbers, but he's not facing left-handers anymore. So if you're a platoon player and you're still slashing under, I mean, with an OPS under 700 in the mid 600s, that it's just you're not going to be an impact offensive player. You're not even going to be a league average offensive player. And for when you're in your prime like this, if you can sell Bryson Stott high, and he gets you the kind of outfielder that we're talking about, I would absolutely include him in a trade because I do think the glove value is there. And, you know, maybe he's a missing piece for a team with a different kind of configuration than what the Phillies have right now. And that's how it works sometimes. Teams have different needs than other teams do, and sometimes you can fill a need for somebody and then they can fill a need for you. We'll see how that, but I'm just trying to think, like, what can you do? What can you do to swap things around? And those are some areas where you've got underperforming players who maybe have some value or don't have value, but you could bring someone up from the minors to replace them.
How many platoons is too many for you? You know,
I think we're talking about, for me, any more than two. I mean,
yeah,
I know
I think that's the line for me as well.
I mean, I know the 93 Phillies made it work. They had
that's
platoons.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, they had. But I think that is the outlier. That's why the 93 team couldn't sustain itself. You can't have a left field platoon, a right field platoon, a shortstop platoon, and a second base platoon, because then you got to have eight guys who are all playing effectively.
That's what I was going to say. You're kind of doubling your needs of the unthinkable, which is players hitting well consistently. I think that's about where I'm at too, because boy, two out of three outfield spots are kind of that way. Second base is kind of that way. You got Trey Turner with his, like, on and off defense over at shortstop, the most important defensive position. Real Muto's struggling and he's at the biggest defensive position. And Bryce Harper's been missing time and was replaced with Otto Kemp. And this team's in first. first place.
They're first place. That's right. That's the crazy thing. And so this whole process isn't meant to just be negative about the Phillies. It's we're trying to figure out like how to make a fix, because this team does have a championship caliber starting rotation. Mm-hmm. Most of the bullpen outside of Jordan Romano and some of the other, you know, multi-inning guys, you know, they've got some good pieces in place there. They've mostly been effective. I think we can have a Jordan Romano conversation next week, because I'm a little concerned that experiment has run its course.
I think it's a fair time as a season to really reevaluate not only just the deals that they made before this season, but just like the overall cases for some of these individual players and who's going to be able to contribute in the months ahead. And honestly, despite that, they're in a good spot. They're in a good spot, not just literally first place. They're in a good spot in that they can win games even after that. Like, they can have a tough stretch, but it doesn't mean it's the end of the world. They've proven that. And look at the rest of this division.
Right.
It seems like the competition may not be as sharp as we thought it could be.
We're going to get to one team in particular in just a second. But I did want to ask you before we talk about the mess. I'm sorry. The Mets.
The acid tongue of John Stolness strikes again.
I got
Take you. That, New York Metropolitans.
I'm on their list now. Trey Turner turns 32 years old on Monday. In season three of his 11-year contract, having a very good season this year, the numbers almost identical to what he had last season. I was looking at the average on base slash all just about exactly the same as they were last year. So now that we're about 3 years into this contract, what grade would you give Trey Turner for his time in Philadelphia so far?
So I feel like you get strong reactions to this because people base it on what he's doing now, when in reality, this is a collection of a real up and down situation with Trey Turner since he's gotten here.
Cold. Yes.
Starting with the World Baseball Classic, where expectations went sky high when he, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm pretty sure he hit 8 home runs in 3 games and one of them landed on the moon. Yeah. Then he scuffles through the first half with the Phillies, it looks miserable. You know, you're getting, it was only sports radio people, but still talking about ripping up his contract. You know, when that talk starts, it's hard not to hear it. Then the ovation, then he gets better. He responds to the moment, comes back, has an all-star season in 2024. But what that means is he was an all-star for the first half of the season. You look into those numbers and you see a man who, after the all-star game, struggled to make hard contact in the second half. He's not as weak at stealing bases as perhaps the perception is. He is, but he's still effective as a base stealer. And though he can still make a play defensively, his defense has obviously become a topic of conversation for a reason, and is at times the reason the Phillies have given up runs that they should not have given up. But he's also leading the league in hits, which is just so rock solid. You're an American that it's like, boy, that's really hard to deny. Like, that's not even like, we don't have to go through any back doors to find an impressive statistic. It's just who has the most hits? It's Trey Turner. So he's accomplished less in Philadelphia by now, I think, than I would have expected. But so have the Phillies in general. So I guess at the end of the day, where I landed was a B minus, in that there's been some impressive stuff from Trey Turner. But yeah, it's just kind of always been followed by a deep pit. And I felt like going down to C was a little too low, given that, again, now he is leading the league in hits now. Like he is an effective level. He's an effective player who can still jump into that highest echelon in the sport. So that's not nothing. I think that gets you to the B tier, and I'm throwing the minus in because he's been a really frustrating player to watch as well.
That's exactly the grade I would have for him. Looking among shortstops in the National League, I think he's fourth in wins above replacement, third or fourth. It kind of he goes back and forth, I think, with Ellie De La Cruz at the moment. But he is, if he maintains this throughout the season, I'll up my grade, because we just haven't seen a full good season from Trey Turner yet, and that's what I would really like to see. Full good season from Trey Turner. If this is the slash line that he has, is the slash line he has at the end of the season, then I think that's great. I will say his defense struggled for earlier in the season. It's been much better of late.
Much better. He locked that up.
Yeah, it's been very good. And that's one of the reasons why his wins above replacement is in the mid threes right now. He's on pace for a 6-win season. That's what you were paying for. Like, that's what you needed from Trey Turner. He's on pace to have a 6-win season. That's a great season, and my grade will go up. It is just shocking to think there are 8 more seasons left on his contract. It already feels like he's been here for a long time.
The shocking and like, okay, we're in year three and we're still waiting for that, like, one good year. And then your mind, we get that, let's imagine. And then the mind immediately goes to, okay, how many more of those do we get in this 11 year deal?
Well, that's what I'm thinking too. Like, if you deal Bryson Stott, Trey Turner's going to be at second base before too long. So, you know, that's also a plan B. All right, Justin, the Mets. Oh, boy. They got swept by the Pirates in Pittsburgh this weekend. They were outscored 30-4 in the three games. Major League Baseball teams since 1901. This is the list of teams since 1901 to score 30 to allow 30 or more runs, score four or fewer, and get struck out 25 or more times. The Mets. That's the list. The Mets did that against the Pirates this week, and the Pirates are the first team since 1901 to score 30 or more runs, allow four or fewer, and strike out 25 or more batters in a three-game series. A historically wretched weekend in Pittsburgh, and it just continues the downward slide that we witnessed as the Mets came through Philadelphia a week ago. They've lost 13 of 16 games, and they held a team meeting during the weekend to try and get this all figured out. Didn't do any good. They did that after Saturday's game. And on Sunday, they looked just as punchless. The starting rotation appears to be cratering, Justin. They are desperate for Sean Manaea to come back. They're not hitting outside of Juan Soto. And even with Juan Soto hitting, nobody's happy with Juan Soto in New York. Is it all coming apart, or is it a blip? I don't know.
Boy, yeah, a week ago, talking about this, it was just like, all right, Mets are having one of their rough patches. That's good. That's humanizing. That's good to see. Now that we're still talking about this, this is more than just a rough patch. I think unraveling is starting to be on the table, man. Like, this is a plummet of sorts. You know, it won't be, you know, a true disaster until they're, like, you know, within a couple games of 500. They're still a ways away from that. But boy, they can't beat anybody. And I think the funny thing is having a team meeting with the Mets is the problem is it's just Mets talking to other Mets. So I don't know if you're really going to solve the problem by just having everybody talk to each other. You're all blowing it. So, I will point out that this all started. Do you know when this started for the Mets?
No, I don't. I mean, 13
Friday
days ago.
The 13th of June, Mets were swept by the Rays at home. They swept the Braves. They lost a series to the Phillies. They split a series at home with the Braves, and they just got swept by the Pirates. So all since Friday the 13th. In that span, they have also lost Griffin Canning for the season. For the season, I think. Wow. I think I saw his return was 2026 today. Regardless, he was helped off the field because he couldn't put weight on his leg. That's bad for your rotation, which was already without starters Sean Manaea, Tyler Megill, and Kodai Senga, who suffered a grade one hamstring strain that set back his return. So yeah, they're getting Manaea back, I think, in a couple of days, supposedly, and Megill's supposed to be back after the All-Star break. But they have to rely on this top-heavy batting order to win them games, and they're not winning games. The Mets just are definitely not okay. They're not okay, and they need to be having the same conversations we're having about the Phillies. Like, they're not in a better spot than the Phillies right now. You know, they might have had better vibes or higher expectations coming into this season,
but
right now,
those vibes are gone.
Those are gone. That's done. they need that. That's going to be an uphill battle to reclaim those vibes because this team does not look okay. We're talking about the Braves and when to say it's done for the Braves. How many more podcasts are we going to have before we're having a different conversation about a different team?
Yeah, as many problems as we feel like the Phillies have and are having right now, they are clearly the best positioned team in this division to win the division in terms of games against the Braves, and the Braves are without Chris Sale for a long time too, so they have their own in issues. And now the Mets with their collapse, and that's kind of feeding on itself. The Phillies, as bad as things got during that one stretch about a month ago, at the beginning of June when they lost, was it 10 of 12 or something like that? Never got to this point, right? They righted the ship, got hot again, and despite the offense not doing much, the Phillies have, and we've seen it, they have the one thing that really, generally speaking, will prevent a catastrophic losing streak, and that is the starting pitching. Because the offense, they will just roll into three or four runs here and there, generally speaking. And so when you have the starting pitching the Phillies have, that gives them a leg up on the Mets, the Braves, and certainly the Marlins and Nationals don't count for anything in the National League East. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. I'm not throwing dirt on the Mets yet, but We'll see how things look at the All-Star break, but I think the Phillies are going to increase this lead over the next 2 weeks heading into the All-Star break. I'm thinking, I bet you this team has a 3 or 4 game lead heading into the All-Star break.
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible not to feel that way, because you're right. When teams are struggling, which at different points, and you could even make an argument for currently, the Braves, Phillies, and Mets have to turn to their like biggest strengths or their most stable components right now. And for the Mets, that's like the first four hitters in their lineup. That's a lot of pressure for those guys. And if any of those guys has like, if two of them have like an offer in a game, that's sort of the ball game, you know, like with as little pitching depth as they have right now and options as they have. And the Braves are the same way. They were throwing out the pitcher they started from their minor league system a couple of days ago. With the broadcasters point out, this is the youngest active player in Major League Baseball. Wow. Like that's who the Braves are throwing out there right now. Because they also, don't have a ton of options, and they have to like, okay, well, let's rely on our offense. That's not a great option for the Braves right now either. They have a couple of guys that are absolutely cratering that were supposed to be effective members. So when the Phillies offense is struggling, what do they turn to? A rotation that is mostly healthy, mostly still going deep into games, and mostly able to hold back an offense to score maybe only one or two runs and give you a chance to win. So even when the Phillies lose, they have a chance to win. I don't know if the Braves and Mets can say the same thing.
Well, on that note, let's finish up this podcast with some final thoughts. Justin, any final thoughts to wrap up?
Just that with July, it's almost here. The summer's midpoint is a couple of weeks away still, but the All-Star game is on the horizon, and I'm just saying that we're going to have a lot of very, very fun All-Star content in the days ahead, both on hitting season. We're going to do a dirty inning about an All-Star game in Philadelphia. That's going to be a lot of fun, and over at the hitting season Patreon on Absolutely Hammered, we're going to have some fun with the All-Star game as well. So it's going to be across the board on all channels. You're going to be seeing a lot of Phillies and All-Star coverage, regardless of how many of them wind up going. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And I want to direct everyone over to the Patreon too, because there's Absolutely Hammered and the Dirty Inning. You do not want to miss episodes of those podcasts either. Patreon.com/hittin'season. That's where you go to get the Dirty Inning and Absolutely Hammered. Patreon.com/hittin'season. Great stuff over there to kind of also keep your Phillies fix moving if you need something a little bit more than what you're getting from Hittin' Season three times a week. So it's a lot of Phillies content coming your way, folks. So just be aware of that. Just be aware. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. I want to remind you to make sure that you give us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcast. Tell your friends and family members about the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any podcast app, YouTube. Of course, all of our roundtable shows are on our YouTube page. We'd love for you to subscribe there so you can watch the show whenever you want. With all the smart TVs, you know, you just type in Phillies and you can watch the show on your TV from the comfort of your own bark lounger. People still have those things. I don't know if they do or not.
Say it. I don't think people are going to know what that is.
Know what a barca lounger is, but if you've got one,
it's like
you know
a chair
what
shaped
about.
Like a dog.
Yes, they're all shaped like dogs. That's exactly what they are. But subscribe to the Hittin' Season YouTube channel, and you'll get all of our podcasts there as well. This is the Phillies, despite the offense, are going to win the World Series. So make sure you're in on the ground floor right now. Thanks everyone for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.